Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is Dia Dynasty, and you are listening to Why Are People Into That with Tina Horn.
How's everybody doing? It's Sunday, it's humid, but it's very well air-conditioned in this dungeon. One of the many, many reasons that we are all pro-dungeon around here. Welcome to Why Are People Into That live at the Eurydice Gallery in Brooklyn, New York. Yeah. I'm Tina Horn, and Why Are People Into That is my slutty, kinky, queer, perverted as fuck sexuality podcast. I have been producing and hosting Why Are People Into That 100% independently for going on 5 years now. And recently, I've been recording more episodes live in front of an audience of community members and like-minded pervs like y'all. And the main difference between the regular Why Are People Into That podcast and the live show is that instead of choosing, so usually on the show, I'll have one guest and they'll choose one sexuality or kink or gender or love topic and we'll like dive really deep into that. But with the live show, I usually like to sort of choose like a variety of different topics and also have a variety of people to talk about those topics. To my left is Jin Hee, a professional dominatrix, community events organizer, gender nonconforming visual artist, and gallerist. Jin was born and raised in Hawaii and is now based in New York. Jin collectively organizes events and art shows with Brooklyn queer, trans, people of color, punk collective, No Flowers. Oh, nice. And then you also organize for Disclaimer Gallery. Cool. So everybody give it up for Jin. So then to Jin's left is Alex or Alice. How do you pronounce your last name?
Mayorano.
Alex or Alice Mayorano is a professional body piercer, hook suspension practitioner, born and based in Brooklyn. Alice is the manager of
Ahemsa.
Alice is the manager of Ahemsa Piercing Studios, the head piercer of Anchors Away, spelled A-W-E-I-G-H. It's a pun. No, it's a good pun. Me too, as is evidenced by me reading these bios. Alice is the head piercer of Anchors Away Suspension Team and a production member of The Skin Project. Everybody give it up for Alice. And then together, is it pronounced allergen? So Allergen is a play piercing demonstration duo based out of Brooklyn, New York, and you may know that because they just did a play piercing demonstration right here on the stage, and they're both probably still kind of bleeding a little bit. Yeah, awesome. Just a little. They publicly demonstrate needlework as a type of ritualistic and sensual practice. I can confirm that that is what that was like. Cool. So that is who they are together. And then, finally, last but not least, we have Amy. And I also don't know how to pronounce your last name, Amy.
It's Boyajian.
Boyajian?
Yeah.
Cool. So Amy Boyajian is the founder of Wildflower, a gender-neutral sexual wellness brand that focuses on pleasure and education. Previous to Wildflower, Amy worked as a dominatrix in New York City, giving her a unique insight to sexuality within our culture and helping her shape her unique style of sexual education. Originally from the UK, Amy currently resides in New York City. And in case you didn't know, Amy is also the person who has curated and produced this amazing event that you are all enjoying the air conditioning of right now. So everybody give it up for Amy. There's a lot to appreciate besides the AC. I'm just really focused on that right now because it's very humid. But there is also, did you guys do the like plaster art that's upstairs? Like all of the like, do you want to talk about those? And also your posters. Can you just talk about like, and the neon, like all of the installation of this space a little bit actually?
Yeah, let me talk to the space a little bit. So this gallery obviously is amazing. I really liked it because of the dynamic of upstairs to downstairs. So we kind of played with that. All of the papier-mâché that you see upstairs, you can touch it, especially the, you know, furry penis one, because that one's fun. But, yeah, they're all papier-mâché. I use them for educational purposes when I'm making videos and stuff like that.
Cool.
Because basically, when I started looking online for that kind of material, they were either, like, tiny and plastic. They were all, like, Caucasian skin tone. Or they were like plush dolls.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm like, my pussy does not look like a plush doll. So I tried to make something that was like visually appealing for more visual learners and also like kind of novelty and fun.
Awesome.
Yeah, we have all of the posters upstairs.
Can you say what the posters say?
Yeah, so we have posters on the wall. That's also a t-shirt design, which we have available. The posters on the wall have like different mantras of, you know, self-love. So it's like, fuck yourself, love yourself, all that good stuff. And then we have posters that say, I heart butt stuff, lube it up, gender doesn't own you, love yourself again. So all of those signs up there that you can like take photos with and just kind of have as your own little personal mantra for the day or whatever. As we come downstairs, so we have this neon sign. We actually ordered one and it came broken. So this is my partner's Nyx, who's also the second half of Wildflower behind the scenes. He put together this in a day, which is like fucking phenomenal. I don't know how he does it. But he does all like the technical aspects of things and the website and all that. And I do all the like, hi everybody stuff. So yeah.
Cool. And so Wildflower is a YouTube channel and an online store, and like, how else would you describe it if somebody has come in today and knows nothing about Wildflower? Because this is your 1 year birthday anniversary of the company.
Yeah.
So mazel tov.
Thank you. Yeah, we're one. We're still a baby, but yeah. So we started.
But old enough to consent.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. In the sex toy world. So yeah, basically Wildflower is this balance between offering products in a non-binary or gender-neutral environment, because, like, why are dildos gendered? We're gendered, not products. Mm. So that whole idea was, like, how can we create products to be more accessible to people, but also offer them in an educational way, too? How can we offer people this information that they should have, but, you know, as the current society we live in doesn't offer? But not in a way that's like scary or intimidating or you're doing it wrong. Just, you know, we're not yucking anybody's yum here. We're just talking about like real life things that people need to know. I think that sometimes sex education is really, really focused on anatomy and don't get pregnant and don't get an STI. But it's also like, how do I play with my nipples? How do I put stuff in my butt? How do I do all these other things? Like, what about like pleasure and consent and like the fun stuff about sex? We also have like a Q&A where people can like write in questions and we answer them. So it's kind of like a balance between like a community, a store, and an educational page. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome. Great work.
Thank you. Thank you.
Cool. So I really would like to start, and I'm going to send this one first to Allergen, as you are collectively known. And I actually, I think that this subject has come up on the podcast before, but I don't think that we've ever done a real focus on it, and it's a total love and interest of mine, and I think it's really fascinating, and there's a lot of mystery around it. So I really want to do wire people into piercing, and we can totally do wire people into getting, piercings that are, more permanent, if you will, like from getting your ears pierced to getting a septum piercing or your belly button pierced or whatever, but also the kind of surface play piercing that you guys were doing earlier, as well as even like rope pulls or suspensions, or I have a sense that you might know a thing or two about those things. So why don't we start by having you both describe a little bit for folks that either missed it here in the room or missed it on the live stream or are listening to the podcast and didn't get a chance to see your performance. How would you describe the performance that you just did half an hour ago?
Well, we just did like a demonstration. I try to stray away from the word performance, mostly because we're just demonstrating something that is a practice within the BDSM community, as far as just like a ritualistic thing that people do for either pleasure or, I don't know.
To push limits and kind of understand the body and be really aware of yourself. Because pain is, as we said in our opening words, pain is just part of life. It just is. And you have to accept that. And when you can embrace that and not let it be the only thought in your head, then you can enjoy yourself with things like play piercing and stuff like that and body suspension. Mm-hmm. And kind of open up a lot of doors that are naturally closed a lot by society, because not a lot of people. I mean, if you look at this, anyone who came in from the outside world who didn't know what we were doing would be like, what the fuck are these people up to? And I found that most of the things in like our demonstrations and in our life is like that. You're kind of like, outside world comes in like, what the fuck is this? When it's really just all normal.
Yeah.
I think I went off tangent a little bit there, didn't I?
No.
I feel like I did, though.
Also, this but is a tangent.
Perfect. So I'm where
all these segues.
So yeah, feel free to tangent away.
I think you did say something a little bit along the lines of like what's maybe the differences between decorative piercing and play piercing and suspension. I think decorative piercing, just to give an example, is like having a nose ring, and then play piercing is kind of what like Alice and I just did, where we just pierced the surface of kind of like a good meaty part of your skin, and suspension is when you put hooks and you literally are elevated from the floor.
Or pull against each other with someone else with hooks, or you tie to like a point or something along those lines as well.
Mm-hmm. What we did today was play piercing. And I don't know what else to say from there.
I mean, really what it is, what we're trying to demonstrate with play piercing is to show that to open it up for other people. A lot of people don't even know that it's part of the BDSM umbrella. I think a lot of people's thoughts on that, you're like, oh, it's flogging, it's rope bondage, you know, shibari, it's, you know, all the regular things. All the regular things you really attribute to BDSM. Yeah, exactly, and latex and leather, but it's a huge spectrum, you know, from electro play to wax play to play piercing.
Yeah.
And I think that's all like finding different sensations that you like. And we have both found, we both actively do body suspension, me being a practitioner, and I'm also in like my real job life, I do professional body piercing, so I do the decorative, so I'm kind of like on all spectrums of it.
And I'm going to go to school for acupuncture. And
nice.
Yeah.
That's an important connection.
Yeah.
I sometimes, I love getting acupuncture, and secretly, I try not to like unconsensually involve my like acupuncturist in like the particular way that I like maybe enjoying it, but I am like definitely like internally aware of the ways that going to acupuncture is like a kinky experience for me, because it's like a chance to like engage in sensation, engage with pain, engage in and engage in a healing modality that then that helps me to realize the ways that kink, not maybe done by like a professional acupuncturist who has gone to school like you are, can also be healing, and vice versa. So then it becomes like, I feel like I, as when I go to acupuncture, I sort of like learn how to be a better bottom. but again, just, you know, in my, I'm not like, you know, moaning or like touching myself behind the curtain. Anyway, I just go home and do that.
I mean, I think a lot of what acupuncture has is like connotation that you're going in for healing, and I feel like a lot of play piercing has the same outcomes, but I guess because of media, or I don't even know what, it kind of puts it under a light that's like not in the same respect, but I think it's super similar. Like, I just feel very, very at ease right now. Thank you.
Like, yeah. Comfortable. And yeah, you after you have, it's very much the same as being in that same subspace. You're very relaxed. You feel ease. If your aftercare, if your partner works well with you, me and Jin work really well together, and we know how to also do it together, but at the end, comfort each other and be in that space, because it is exhausting. You do have to deal with, like, a lot of emotions, a lot of flooding, and any pain can be transformative. Mm-hmm. I've seen it in doing piercings on somebody. Doing just a simple nose piercing can change someone's entire perception of themselves. Mm-hmm. And body suspension is a totally different animal. I think anyone who suspends comes out a totally different person, because mm-hmm. it's a totally transcendent experience in every way.
So let me ask, for folks who have never had, so you guys sat on the stage for your demo, and what were the gauges of the needles?
20.
So you had 20 gauge needles, and like, to give a basis for comparison, what is the gauge of a needle when someone is like, if somebody goes to the mall to get their earlobes pierced, what gauge is that?
18.
18.
So it's one size bigger, generally. So we did one size smaller than like a standard earring would be. The smaller the number, the bigger the gauge.
The smaller the number, the bigger the gauge. Stupid. And it is stupid, but especially if you're dyslexic, right?
Yeah. You're like, yeah. Okay, great.
but also, I guess I was going to say that there's like a correspondence of pain, but not necessarily, like, probably for some people, like bigger gauges are more intense, but probably for some people, smaller gauges are more intense. What would you say about that?
I find, like, with the bigger gauges, like, when we were in the back posting ourselves and taking our needles out, we were both commenting on how much these little itty-bitty needles fucking hurt coming out. Like,
yeah.
They suck a bunch. But, like, a suspension hook, which is usually an 8 or a 6 gauge, doesn't feel like anything coming out.
Huh.
It's
so weird.
The body's just a weird fucking thing, really, at the end of the day.
So, y'all were up here with 20-gauge needles, and I definitely want to talk about, like, the ritualistic part of safety, which is also maybe part of the reason that there is, like, a threshold for people trying it, which is probably actually good, because, like, without the proper training or guidance or materials, like, you probably, like, piercing yourself with a safety pin, like, you know, that's probably going to be fine, but anything more than that, there's a lot of risk or assessments that you need to make. But anyway, so you guys had 20-gauge needles, and you were mostly doing surface piercings on the tops of one another's thighs, yeah. Right? So can you describe the sensation both leading up to when you're sitting face to face and you're anticipating and maybe adrenaline is starting to flow and you know that you're going to be pierced, and then the actual sensation of the piercing going in, and then you were also just mentioning that, like nipple clamps, it can feel really different being removed than it can feel going in. Can you talk about the sensation, what you like about it, what you don't like, tips, tricks?
I feel like for today, I didn't have time to think about or anticipate any pain. And at this point, maybe that's just like a coping mechanism I've developed. But I, like, Alice just pierced my face like yesterday or 2 days ago, and that I felt
yes,
more.
Yes, Friday.
Right here.
Those little,
like, right by my
Jim
nose.
Jones up there.
Yeah. That I felt like I had so much more anxiety over, and it was only two. So there's, like, for me personally, I don't have anything of like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get pierced 20 times, I'm freaking out. I was more like, is everything going to be clean and sterile? Where are we going to pierce? I thought about environment a lot, that I had no time to think about it. But during the actual piercing, we strategically said that we're going to pierce each other at the same time. That was the first time I've ever done that.
That's cool.
So it was like whenever I was piercing myself, I mean, sorry, when I was piercing Alice, and Alice was piercing me, it was like I was feeling what I was giving at the same time, and we counted to three every time, or we just said, you ready? And we checked in every time, and prior to us even coming up here, I was like, hey, as a dominatrix, I like to also practice, like, clear consensual boundaries, and safe words sometimes don't always, like, translate into performance, so I wanted to establish something with Alice prior, but we've done it before, so I don't know, it just... Yeah.
I've always had, I've been doing, like, I don't want to call it, like, I've done suspension for, like, gallery events and, like, personally suspended for gallery events and for shows and things like that. And I did theater for many, many years through school. So I kind of have this weird thing when it comes to anything that's on stage where it's just like a disconnect. I'm more focused on doing the thing more than I am what's going to happen. But once you're in it, yeah, getting pierced, it's weird. You get pierced and in that moment you're like, wow, that fucking kind of sucked, but it also kind of felt really good. And I don't know if I want to do it again, but I kind of want to do it again. And then you do it again. You're like, okay, maybe I want to do that one more fucking time.
Yeah.
And then I do it again. And then you're like, all right, maybe I'm done. Okay, I'm going to do it one more time.
Yeah, yeah.
Like when we were done piercing each other, Jin looked at me and was like, I could do two more. I'm like, no, we can't.
Yeah,
we're both tired. We pushed ourselves.
Like
we
adrenaline.
Only feel like we can.
Yeah, I was just like, I could do more. Because it's like an endorphin rush every time. And once that rush kind of goes away, it's like, oh, I could do that one more time for it to happen again. But yeah, we had time constraints, so if it was up to me, maybe I probably would have had a bunch, but I don't know.
We were also like kind of at the point where we're like, we're getting a little sweaty.
Yeah,
let's get a little tough. Like each one we're like, we're looking at each other like, oh, that one kind of sucked a little bit more than the last.
Yeah.
Can you recommend, thank you. Can you recommend beyond, you know, without going through a whole tutorial of, you know, creating a sterile environment and gloves and all of that stuff, sort of more on like an emotional or psychological level, can you give tips for preparing for something that is as potentially not only like the physical sensation of pain and maybe pleasure, if those things perhaps are linked for you, but also the endorphin rush and the adrenaline and all of those responses, which, as I think we all know from many different kinds of experiences, can sometimes get away from you, or if you like get really like, you know, quote unquote high in that way, and then you guys have talked about aftercare. If you don't have aftercare, you can kind of be left with like a little bit of a drop from it. So it definitely seems like piercing, maybe it's because you're breaking the skin, for whatever reason, maybe it is because of the taboo, has, seems like there is an exceptional amount of consideration that needs to be placed for how you're going to be processing that sensation. Can you guys speak to that?
Prior,
during, afterwards, like if folks want to try it, what are some tips from your experience, not only to get the most out of it, but also to take care of yourselves emotionally as well as physically?
I think to get the most out of it, really just submit is really the word. It's, and even when we've done suspension things, I mean, even when you were suspending and you're having a hard time, mm-hmm. I came up to you and was like, you just have to submit. You have to accept what it is and that it's gonna hurt and that you're gonna experience this if you wanna get to the other side. Mm-hmm. If you wanna.
What's on the other side?
Whatever is there for you.
Or strength, yeah, for me it's
It's ambiguous as fuck.
Yeah. It's different for everybody, and it's different every time, so, I don't know.
I think having someone who knows how to guide you through it is crucial for piercing, specifically, more than, anything in BDSM or any of that spectrum, you definitely need someone who knows what they're doing. Like, I wouldn't recommend just, like, going home and picking it up at home and, like, looking on the internet and be like, I could figure this out. Like, talk to people who do it. Sit with them. Have them do a demo for you. Get pierced by them and have them pierce you and kind of get an idea of what it's like to guide someone through it, because you actually take on a lot when it's a give and take all the way through.
Yeah.
Cool. How did you guys get into it?
For me, like, piercing in general?
Yeah.
Decorative initially when I was 16, I was like, it's the only thing I can do that kind of encompasses, like, I don't know, pain and pleasure.
Isn't it so funny that you can have this experience of, like, I'm thinking about being a teenager and really, 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 really wanting to get my belly button pierced and, like, going to the mall. And isn't it funny that you can, like, get pierced at the mall and like have this like really intense experience, and yet like there's such a stigma around like actively consciously pursuing erotic pain, and yet there are some things about it that we endure them and we understand that they're going to be painful or uncomfortable, but there's not as much of a stigma around it. I mean, there used to be much more stigma around piercing and tattoos, but I don't know if you can speak to that at all.
I mean, for play piercing in general, and specifically, I mean, that was introduced to me from working in dungeons and working with people that didn't want to walk out with, like, a piece of jewelry or some sort of signifier that they got pierced that day. That was my intro to play piercing, but...
I've been a professional piercer since 2012, 13-ish, working actively in Brooklyn. So I've noticed that decorative piercing has got, since it's so in the mainstream, it's kind of gone past this point where the ritual is gone. The respect for the ritual is gone. Back in the old days, anyone with like, you know, you get these large gauge piercings, you get these ear piercings, and it's a ritual, and it's decorative, but it's part of, it's very cultural, and now it's just, it's kind of monetized and capitalized. So you go to the mall and you get pierced and you don't even like think about the ritual. You don't even think about anything beyond like getting this new piece of jewelry. And that's fine, really. I mean, decorative piercing is decorative piercing and it's awesome and it makes you feel better about yourself. So it's still doing the same thing.
Totally.
But as far as like play piercing goes, I just like to see what my body can do. It's partly why I got into piercing, into suspension. I mean, it's fun. It's just fucking fun. That's all.
So
I mean, that's
fun.
Really it. Play piercing for me is actually not sexual. It's more of like a sensation thing. It's kind of like the same reason I like to eat a bunch of psychedelics. It's just like you're trying to transcend and leave your body, using the body to do that. Same thing for suspension, but it's definitely for some people, it's totally like a sexual thing. And I think that's important that we know that as well.
Right. I want to also piggyback off what Alice said, and it's similar. Like, I get similar sensations of when I do mushrooms, and I have, like, I see similar things. Like, I feel really close to the people around me. I see, like, a white glow around certain things. After suspending, I can hear trees more than I can hear people in cars, which is super important for me to have a connection to living in New York from Hawaii. Mm. So, I do it for non-sexual reasons a lot. So.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, we could go into it, and there are lots of awesome books and resources out there and teachers and practitioners who will talk about ancient rituals and ceremonies and traditions from many cultures all over the world that may involve body modification of various kinds, breaking the skin in various ways, and maybe also psychotropic plant medicine in order to get into a trance state, in order to be connected to clarity, the divine, your community, yourself, whatever. So that's cool. So if people like want to have a psychedelic experience, but they're like scared of LSD, then you can just visit your friendly neighborhood play piercer.
Or suspend. It's pain and like, it's going to go on a tangent to the whole like cultural thing, but
yeah.
All those like transcendent ceremonies, pain is integral to it.
Yeah.
Even if it's like the Okipa where you hang off your chest or you sew bells into your skin and dance, or you just dance for fucking a day and a half.
Yeah. Sounds great.
It's all pain. It's all, and that's how you get to that transcendental state, and sometime ayahuasca. But it really depends on where you're at and what you're doing.
Yeah. Cool.
I was gonna say,
oh, yes, please,
Amy. I feel like, isn't that like everything, though? Like, don't we transcend through everything that has some kind of pain? You know, like anything you're trying to do in life, whether you're like, I want to get my college degree, or I want to start a store, or I want to do anything, where you're like, I'm going to get to this next level. God, it's fucking painful. So it's like having a sense of control over that pain can also be like very enlightening. But it's like, it's a fine balance between, because you are creating the pain in a sense, but you also like have to actively like submit to the pain, like you were saying. Like you can have an idea about what's going to happen, but you ultimately don't know. Like, you don't know if you're going to, like, be like, oh, that was fine, or, like, have a moment where you're like, you know, it was fine, or if you're going to cry, or if you're going to have to call it quits, and that, or you have to, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. So it's like you're creating the circumstances for, like, pain, so you just have to, like, follow through with what pain means.
That's a really good point, and I've certainly found and spoken about this a lot, and I know other people feel this way, and I wonder how you feel, that lots of BDSM play, ritual, relationships can be a way of having control over pain or harnessing pain, and in a way that can can, for some people, have the result of fearlessness in other parts of your life, whether it's starting a business or starting a relationship or running a marathon or something like that. Like, once you have been suspended by hooks in your back and you like endured that and survived, then you're like, I can probably like take the LSAT. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I feel like I love that.
I can't, but
yeah, I also feel like it's not only like a, oh, I'm going to experience this pain, therefore like I can experience other things because I've known what it feels like or I've created that for myself, but I feel like it's like also a reliving of other traumas and pains, whether they be physical or mental. So you're like, I'm going to create this circumstance that happened to me where I felt like I didn't act the way I wanted to act, or somebody acted against me in a way that I didn't want to act, and I'm able to like have control in some way. Even if you, I feel like when I was working as a dominatrix, that was something that was really popular. It was popular, really popular, or really common, was this particular thing has happened to me. Can we reenact it? Either doing the exact same thing so I can just like relive it and recalculate it in my head, or can we change the scenario and I'm the one who wins or whatever?
It's a gestalt therapy. I think that's like a type of therapy where you can like re-LARP, essentially like live action role play. That's you can like reenact something that was traumatizing.
Yes.
and then you have control over the outcome, and then essentially the theory behind that type of therapy is like you don't have that trauma anymore because you redid it in a way that you felt like you had control over it. Who knows if it works?
Right away, first time, every time.
I don't know. I don't know.
But yeah, I feel like it's very like therapeutic, and like pain can also be very therapeutic because like pain is also linked to so many other things like anger and fear and frustration, and like sometimes it's like, oh, I'm so frustrated with things. Like, but if I can get to that like subspace of pain, we were just talking outside about how like tattoos can also do that too. Like you're just like, for the first couple minutes, it's all the adrenaline and you're frustrated, and then all of a sudden you hit this high and you're like, oh, like the world just melts away. Yeah. You're still getting like, you know, drilled with a needle, but it's like, it's you created that. You're the one who was like, I would like to get this tattooed, please. And, you know, so you created the circumstance, but you're able to like explore the feelings you have without like the universe just like throwing shit at you. You actually just made the circumstance for yourself.
Mm-hmm. And then you get to look at it all the time.
Exactly.
And other people get to look at it.
Exactly.
And ask you what the story is. And then you can look at them and say, conquering pain.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I like to do. And people don't talk to me anymore. You know something? It's my goal. Except for you guys. So since Amy and Jin and I have all worked as professional dominatrixes, and perhaps Alice has as well, I don't know, your life. I would imagine that being a professional body worker, like body mod expert, there's like a little bit of an overlap.
It's definitely, it's more of like, I found that being a piercer, I'm more comfortable with being a therapist. Mm-hmm. Actually, I feel like a lot, and like with Dom especially, it's you're like talking with people and working them through. The instant is a fucking second.
Yeah.
You're in and you're out, and it's over, and it barely hurts. You're like, all right, great, it's done.
Yeah.
But it's all like the lead up. It's the talking. It's the walking people off of ledges. You're like, no, you're going to be fine. I promise. It's this 1 second, and then your life will go on, and you'll just be happy you did it.
Yeah.
And you'll hate yourself if you did it, you know?
Yeah.
But it's totally elective. It's all...
Yeah, it's funny. It occurs to me that when Amy was talking about how good, how popular it is that dominatrixes who are often women will experience from their clients who are often cisgendered men, not always, but often, especially historically, I think it may be changing, that cis men are coming in, and a lot of them white as well, and a lot of them upper middle class and or wealthy, are coming in and saying like, oh, I've had this trauma or this bad experience that I like want to relive and like have more power. And it's like, man, really, like more women need access to that kind of that kind of therapy, that kind of body work, that kind of work with others, at, you know, women and trans people and definitely people of color, like the people who actually are experiencing trauma in life, that we could like be giving more public service to folks to work through all of that. If we're spending all of this time taking care of like people who have like the most power in the world being like, oh, I was kind of sad about this one time. Maybe other people could be benefiting from that more. What do you guys think about that?
I've definitely had clients that vary from gender and race.
That's great.
Yeah, I think I'm very lucky in that. But that's also if you work out of a commercial dungeon, it's like a lottery. And if they choose me, maybe it's because I'm a person of color that they're like, oh, let's do this like similarity thing. I don't know. I don't know why I was chosen in some respects. But I agree with you. I think that there needs to be more representation for clientele end, and it shouldn't just be cisgendered white men being able to pay for services that everybody has.
Can benefit from.
Yeah, exactly. But with that said, I think that there should be a lot of communication and intention setting and just dialogue between client and worker. And SESTA and FOSTA should fucking stop and let us do that.
Yeah. Yeah, like, for me, like, the whole time also while I was the dominatrix, I was also, like, a full-time yoga teacher. Mm. I was definitely, like, and they were very, very similar. But, like, the thing, you'd be really surprised. It's all direction. It's all about telling people what to do, basically, right?
Mostly bending over.
Yeah, lots of bending over. Lots of, like, ow, that hurts. And you'd be like, shh.
Good for you.
Yeah. So the thing that I kept saying in my head was like compassion. Because I would get very angry. I get very angry being like, wait, you're on the top of this like societal food chain and you're the one that's like, ooh, poor me. But then I realized that like the pain and trauma and like all of these worries that we have are like the communal thing that links us. They may not be the same things, but the feelings are the same. And it's also like, how do you process that in your day-to-day life? So I definitely felt like, oh, if I am able to help this person who just happens to be like a cishet, you know, middle-class, upper-class man, process his feelings a little bit better. Maybe he'll be able to process his feelings a little bit better in the outside world with all of us, you know? Like, I just felt like it was, like, I actively also, like, tried to engage in, like, things that they weren't used to. Like, oh, let's speak with non-binary language. How about we explore things, you know, maybe that you're not comfortable with, how, you know, especially when it was, like, memorizing things. Like, I get my subs to memorize stuff. And I would always be like, okay, so we're going to memorize only literature written by black femmes. And you're going to, you know, say that back to me. To the point where, like, you've memorized it, but, like, you've memorized this really important part of, like, you know, queer femme literature. And, like, what does that mean to you? You know, so it's just, I felt it was, like, trying to use the tools that I had with the people that I had. Because, yeah, it's not accessible to pay a couple $100s to see someone for those kind of services. I also think, too, is an element of, like, educating people to feel competent and have the tools to do that themselves if they want to. You know, like, obviously seeing a professional or, you know, talking to a professional. Remember, if you're talking to a dominatrix, you're paying them for their time. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're asking questions, you're paying them for their time. But, like, how can you explore that BDSM by yourself, with your partner, with your friend, you know? How can you have a kind of sense about what's going on so you can, like, join a community? You could go to an event, like, the, you know, something that we had today, and then
volunteer.
You can, like, yeah, exactly.
So I think that we need radical wealth distribution so that more people can afford to see a dominatrix.
Exactly.
That's my proposal.
It should be like a tax break.
I write me off, Danny. Okay, so does anyone? I love that piercing has already gone to all of these places. See, tangenting is good. It's what we're here to do.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, why are people into that, listeners? It's Tina here to talk to you about, guess what? That's right, butts. Now, don't forget, it's still Anal August, and the Pleasure Chest is still in the midst of their month-long series of ass-obsessed workshops. At the Upper East Side store right here in New York City this week, they've got Kiss My Sass, which is an anal worship workshop taught by yours truly, as well as classes on double penetration, pegging, and a whole lot more. Follow at Pleasure Chest Stores on Instagram for some great butt sex giveaways from B-Vibe. And don't forget, if you visit any of the Pleasure Chest stores in New York City, LA, and Chicago, you'll get a free Cal Exotics Booty Rocker silicone butt plug with any purchase over $40. If you're ready for this jelly, visit pleasurechest.com. Okay, now back to the show. The question is, you know, the relationship, can we speak to some of the relationships between the intimacy of breaking the skin, the intimacy of drawing blood, the intimacy of doing body mod, and you use the word harm, and I'm curious if you guys would talk about what the word harm means to you in relation to body modification, I think that you were saying also that you feel like maybe that there's more intimacy there, or that there's just as much to explore there in terms of intimacy as penetrative sex or orgasms, and or what like we more in a more mainstream traditional way might think of as sex. Do you guys want to hit that?
I feel like the word harm is so tied in with consent. Like, if you go get a tattoo, you go get a piercing, you usually sign a consent form. If you go see a dominatrix, you are going to know, you go in as a client knowing that you are about to do something to your body. I personally don't see any of those activities that I just listed as harmful, because I consensually agree that I'm going to do something that is, like, in my perception of all of those things are pleasurable, or the beneficial, happy, any positive word, right? So I also think harm is subjective, and harm is only done if I didn't want it to be done. Mm-hmm. That's very loose. That idea is, like, very loose in my head, but that's, like, the main thing is I don't see any of this on a client level. As a client, a person who gets tattoos, piercings, and I'm a switch, like, I don't think that I've ever received harm. The only time I've received harm is if I didn't consent to any of that. Does that make sense?
It does. This is semantics, but it's also really useful, right? Like, language is very powerful, and I would agree. I think that harm is a word that I would more associate with destruction. If I'm spanking someone because we both want to do a spanking scene, I'm not, even if I burst their capillaries, I'm not destroying them, because first of all, I know that they're going to heal. Actually, I would say, first of all, we've both consented. That's the most important thing. But also, I'm aware of what I can do to them, that we will have this experience together, and then we will both heal and move on. Whereas if I was trying to destroy someone, as much as we might like to say, like, I want to fucking destroy you, like, we don't want to, like, cause, like, irreparable harm. And I think that is an important distinction to make, because I think a lot of people think of BDSM and kink, and they don't understand the difference between, like, sadomasochism, which is consensual erotic pain, and assault, right? Like, they don't understand how you could actually, like crave pain, eroticize pain, like, want to connect with someone by playing with pain. And so it's really important that we distinguish between assault and play, and the most important distinction is consent. But then I also think that making risk-aware assessments and knowing, because you could do something that changes you forever, intentionally or unintentionally, but it, again, making like harm reduction and making like risk-aware assessments.
To add basically what Jay was saying, what you were saying as well, I think it is, it's pain is very hyper intimate, especially when you're paying someone or you're just with your partner and you're both deciding to like engage in pain, because your brain, when you're experiencing pain, doesn't know that you're about it. At the end of the day, your fight or flight is going off and it's deciding, what do? I need to get the fuck out of here. So it's again coming back to like submitting to it, and that involves so much trust. Even if it's just between like a tattooer and a client, or a piercer and a client, or a suspendee, or a dom and a sub, you have to have so much trust in this person who's doing it for you that it becomes this hyper-intimate experience, more so than just like regular sex, which two people get into it, and you're into it, and you're done, and then you guys watch fucking Matlock for 2 hours. I don't know. It's just like, it's a... But, you know...
Sex is tired, pain is wired.
Yeah,
okay.
with like regular sex, you're... Consent. I'm gonna just umbrella consent. You're fucking, you're orgasming, you're climaxing, you're cuddling. It's over. It's really that. And you know, no one needs to be like, there's no aftercare. There's no.
Could cuddle. You could cuddle forever.
Oh, it's just the best.
The Matlock thing. I'm sorry. I watch cartoons.
No, we're bunny ears in this situation. Like, we're watching antenna TV. Like, we got 7 channels. but in, like, and even, like, in a flogging scene, or a flogging scenario, you have to decide, like, I'm going to hurt you. And you trust me enough to know that I'm going to hurt you to your capacity, to what you can handle, and I'm not going to push beyond that. And that's why I think pain becomes so hyper-intimate compared to just, like, fucking.
What came to mind when you asked that question was like the hierarchy of body fluids, right? Like, I think that we always think like jizz is like ultimate, and then we have like squirt and all these like fluids, but blood is like such a scary to some people. If we're talking about people who have periods, it can be a very shameful thing. It can be a very upsetting thing, something you want to hide. I like recently did a lot of work around period sex and like talking and working with people who have periods, and like the associations that we have with blood is very intense, and it's like some people have a lot of, I understand like some people are grossed out by the blood, but like is it really, are you grossed out by blood, or do you have like I'm gonna pass out, I can't be a doctor? Or are you, you know, like I've cut my knee and I'm like fainting? Or is it you just have all of these like associations, like blood is dirty, it's diseases, it's like all of these things where it's like, that's not really, like why are we creating some body fluids to be amazing and some not? And like obviously I feel like a lot of them come into like patriarchy standards of, you know, jizz is God. But like all body fluids should be like sacred, and all body fluids can be like celebrated and not thought of something that is like disgusting and gross. They can be beautiful too.
Yeah, I think that it's really, I mean, this is where the idea of making risk-aware assessments is very important, and, you know, this is a sort of theoretical and, like, raunchy and political show, so we're not necessarily going to do, like, a whole tutorial on safety practices or best practices of blood-borne pathogens, but I think that it is, seriously, I think that this is an example of what you're speaking to, Amy, about the visceral repulsion that people have against certain fluids, and I did an entire episode specifically about fluids with Jenny Zhang, and another episode about blood with Maxwell Lander. So there's tons of wet stuff all over this podcast over the past few years, if you want to check that out. But I think that, you know, a lot of people have like a repulsion to, you know, some people have more of a repulsion to you know, ejaculate that comes out of a penis, or ejaculate that comes out of a vagina, or spit, or blood, or you know, discharge. People are repulsed by sweat, you know, and then they like put chemicals in their armpits so that they don't sweat. Anyway, but at the same time, it is very important. And this, what I want to get at is that, you know, there is frankly, criminal and unethical lack of comprehensive sexual education for young people and adults in this country and around the world. And so what we teach is fear, and what we teach is repulsion and shame and avoidance, instead of understanding, hey, I want to do some piercing, so I'm going to understand bloodborne pathogens, or like, I really want someone to come in my ass without a condom, so I need to understand like what STIs I'm at risk for, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that education is very important, and learning to challenge where does, you know, your propensity to faint when you see blood coming from, and like challenging that. And I don't know, what are some, do you guys have some tips for challenging some like prejudices that you may have against certain body fluids?
Do I have like tips? Submerge, like go. Like I'm like, but also like know this, like where you're actually getting your like experiences from. Like if you're like, oh, I want to get acclimated to like the sight of blood, you're not going to like put on like a horror movie, because first of all, that's not blood. That's fake blood. And also it's like way over the top and exaggerated. Like, what about like the blood that you two both like had afterwards when I saw you taking the needles out? It was like minimal, real. It wasn't like oozing, you weren't everywhere, but it was like what kind of media are you getting used to? Are you looking at media and like porn is really big for like exaggerating things. Like
anime.
You know, yeah. If we're looking at like, you know, if someone's like, oh, I want to like get used to like pissing on someone. I really want to piss on my partner. You know, notice that if what you're watching or what you're engaging with, if you want to go that route, it can be so exaggerated. Like, you piss on someone, it's like, oh my god, it's like bright yellow, it's like that first pee you have in the morning, you're like, it's not probably going to be like that. So like, I always say like, do it yourself first. I'm a very like DIY, like if you want to try something, like if you're like, hey, I want to try anal, like I'm going to masturbate first to like have that gauge of control. And I think you can do that with fluids too, if you make those fluids, obviously. But you can like gauge that personally and be like, oh, okay, it's not as scary or wild as crazy as it seems.
I also think it's important to change the way that we react to certain like social encounters. If someone's like, I have to pee, or like, oh, I'm bleeding, and don't say ew or something, like that's also going to change and construct the way that we just like view bodily fluid. And maybe it's totally normal, and I totally understand if your reaction is just like, oh, like that, but if you just like take one time out of the many instances that you see somebody who maybe like somebody smells like pee or so, like just think about like, no, I'm, this is just an arbitrary thing I threw out. But like the way that you react can really sculpt the way that people view on a larger level, or sorry, a larger scale of like how we just view our own bodies. So.
And I think asking yourself why is really, so I have a lot of friends, I grew up in like the projects, so I have a lot of friends who are very limited in their idea of sex, you know what I mean? Like it's like very much like pound on top, do your best, get out of there, you know?
I think do your best is a great mantra.
So like a lot of that, like that segment of like most straight dudes that I know that I'm friends with, they're like, the idea of period sex is like disgusting to them. And I always just ask them, why?
Yeah.
Why? Why? What exactly? It's actually kind of the fucking best. So you're just kind of like, ask yourself why. You're like, oh, that person, they want to pee on me. Why do I think that's gross? Is there anything specific? Does it actually gross me out? Or am I just working what society told me is what's gross, you know? Because I'm just kind of getting back to the period. It's fucking period sex rules. I don't know why anyone's against it. It's a weird thing. I don't know. That's my piece.
That's the best.
Period sex is the best. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I think that we have time. No, it's the best. I think we have time for one more question. That is a fucking great question. Yeah. Thank you so much for asking it. I almost want to go back on my word and actually include the recording of you saying it, but I'm going to try to restate it. So basically the question is, if you are going into a kink space, there is a tendency that people will have the sort of rules of engagement in a space like the Eurydice Gallery might be, oh, so what are you into? What makes you kinky? And the person asking the question feels like, well, I just met you. This is crazy. but you know, I don't necessarily feel like sharing something that intimate with you, and they wanted to know if that makes them an asshole, and definitely it doesn't make you an asshole. But I also think that people asking folks what they're into doesn't necessarily make them an asshole either, so we can unpack that a little bit. So that's basically the question. I really want to say a couple of things. First of all, there's a misconception that people who transgress any kind of sexual convention, whether they're queer or they're kinky or they're a sex worker or they do sex education like in this space, or they make erotic art or anything like that, that if they've transgressed regular boundaries, that means that they don't have boundaries. And that's a myth, actually. We have much better boundaries because we're like out here figuring a lot of shit out on our own, or remaking our rules. And so that's one thing. And another thing is that I think that when you're part of a subculture, sometimes it can be so liberating to have found, you know, other people waving their freak flags, that you come to really strongly identify with the thing that makes you a part of that subculture. Maybe you don't feel a part of any other culture. Maybe you don't feel a part of your family of origin. Maybe you don't feel a part of the town that you grew up in. Maybe you don't feel like a part of the church that people try to indoctrinate you into, or whatever. So some people have like desires or like get hard or get wet for particular things, and that might feel like a really intimate thing to share with a stranger. And sometimes kink identities or sexual identities can become like a part of your identity, right? So somebody, for example, might be into age play, right? Like they may be turned on by imagining or role playing themselves as an age that's different than the age that they are. It might be an older age, younger age, whatever. And some people identify as littles, right? So somebody might be like, oh, I'm a little, I'm 5. And like this person you're talking to is clearly 40, right? So for some people, or somebody might say, I'm a puppy. Or somebody might say, I'm a top, and that is my identity. I'm Toppy McTopperson from Top Town, you know? And I know you know that guy. So some people are very, very proud to identify in that way, and they get the fucking t-shirt, and they get the tattoo, they get the hat, you know, they get the, like, they get the necklace. And that can be really great, right? And we want to encourage that. But then also, like, maybe somebody is exploring or is into something but doesn't necessarily, like, want to, like, lead with that identity. Or also maybe their identity is fluid or it's shifting over time, or they don't want to be put in a new box. And I think that also sometimes if you've been... The other thing I'll say before I pass the mic is that sometimes when we've been oppressed and then we feel like we find liberation or we find a community where we felt alienated before, sometimes we like reenact that oppression that has been done to us onto other people that we either perceive like, now I have power over this person, and so I can be a mean girl, or I can be a snob, or I can cross somebody else's boundary because other people tried to cross my boundaries, or I can be a know-it-all and be like, you don't know me, I'm the toppy McTopperson from Top Town, right? So let's stop doing that. Just because somebody bullied you doesn't mean that you can bully other people. And also, if you, your question about like what are some good icebreakers or way to engage with people and talk about kink that doesn't just have to do like, well, I'm the king and I'm the queen and I'm the pawn and I'm the knight and this is how we're all gonna like engage with one another. Like, I'm really would love to hear what y'all's suggestions are and thoughts are on that. So that's my monologue about your great question.
I don't really have a suggestion, but the only analogy that kept running through my head was like, it's almost like a kink credit score. Like, if you don't have a high enough credit score, then you can't come to this fucking party. And I think it's like super like classist or whatever, or just ist of some sort. Yeah, like kinkist, I guess. And it's not fair, especially if like kink is supposed to be an alternative to something that is closed off. It's supposed to be open, right? That's just not fair. There's other parties that I'm sure you could find or other communities that will be like, okay, and I'm sorry you've had that experience. Just tell them to freak the fuck off and go find another party. I don't know. No, you don't have to say that if you don't want to, but I don't know. I don't really have a suggestion other than there'll be other things out there.
Yeah, I think sometimes, everybody reads, like, the ethical slut, and they're all just like, okay, we have to do A and B and C and D, and, like, they do everything right, and then but they don't get the response that the book says they're going to get. So then it's like, wait, well, I asked you what you're into, and you're supposed to tell me, and then we're supposed to do it, right? So it's I feel like it's, like, engaging with people with being like, okay, I get that's your strategy of how you navigate this space, but like, this is how I'm doing it. And also, like, we're both just humans. I see that a lot too when people want to be accessible to people's pronouns. They'll go straight up to the person that they're unsure of their pronouns and say, what are your pronouns? And they're just like, hi, my name's Amy, nice to meet you. Like, it's sometimes, especially I think in communities that require a lot of like consent and a lot of structure to them, sometimes people get caught up in that structure of being like, we have to do things this way. And just to like piggyback off what Tina was saying, there can definitely be like a replication of like what we see and experience in society in those spaces. And I definitely have seen that. There's tons of kink communities and pockets of kink communities, especially in big cities like New York. But they can get very like hierarchy standards of like, okay, well, I'm going to this party, but it's ran by like three white cis men that call themselves the Lords. And I'm like, wait, what? This is just exactly what was outside, inside here. So it is about finding your own space and finding your own people. And honestly, if that space doesn't make you feel comfortable and accepted, then don't give them your fucking time or energy. Oh, money,
This isn't just like a monetary transaction. It's like an energy exchange that you're having.
This is for you to explore who you are on your terms. And if they can't do that for you, then bye. You know?
And I'm going to offer a little bit of a nihilistic thing from years of being in the service industry. People fucking suck. People just fucking suck. That's just the truth of it. And any community, even in the most inclusive and good community, those shitty fucking people are going to wiggle their way in there. And they always make it to, like, the top of the thing because they're shitty. And they just step on everybody, and that's how they get there. So they get to throw their party. So you go in there, and they're like, what's your fucking kink card? Let me see your badges, bro. So so people fucking suck, because you just have to find, like, small, tight groups that are willing to not be assholes about everything and have, like, this holier-than-thou attitude about, like, we're all just doing weird sex stuff. Let's just all have a good time and have to do weird good sex stuff. That's all.
I also, having been like a professional, like sexual extrovert for a long time, I have a lot of my closest friends are perverts, and a lot of what we do together are very explicitly pervy things, for you know, professionally and personally, on and off the clock, et cetera, et cetera. And something that I have realized in the past few years is really, really important to me, is that I can get together with my pervert friends and talk about something other than leather, and like it feels so good to be able to talk about everybody's favorite butt plug and like what gauge needle you, and like how long were you suspended, bro? Like all of that is like really, really, really fun and so amazing if you've like had these thoughts and feelings and yearnings for your entire life, and then you get to talk about it with people in a way that feels really good. That's fantastic. But like also like, can we like get together and like have a potluck, you know? And like, and you know, what can we go see Sorry to Bother You? Like, can we like go for a bike ride in the park? What else do you like? And I think that just like if you started to talk to somebody in a bar, they might not be like, what's your favorite position? Like, you know, you might also like want to first talk about like, what are your commonalities? Because if you do develop a sexual or a kink relationship or friendship or all of the above for any period of time with that person, like you might want to talk about interests other than sex. So maybe start with those, because if somebody is, if you enjoy talking with someone about food, like then you may get to the point where you like want to jive with them about more intimate things. So I would say if somebody comes up to you and wants to go like straight into the sex talk, you could even be like, you can have like something, you know, like an icebreaker ready. Like actually we did, I did this sex worker writing workshop about like envisioning horror-topias the other day with my friend Mistress Blunt, and she had this icebreaker that ended up going really, really well. So I'm going to gift it to you all right now, which is if you were meat, I mean, we all are meat, but if you were meat and you were being prepared, how would you want to be prepared? And obviously, if you would prefer a vegan or vegetarian option, you can. But it was so beautiful. You know, some people wanted to be smoked in a barbecue, and some people wanted to be in a crock pot, and some people were like, I really want to be like shared with my loved ones, you know. So have an icebreaker that might, I mean, obviously that's very erotic if you're a pervert, but you know, have something that's like not specifically like what are you into, that you can like get started on a conversation together. So that would be like one piece of advice that I would have about that. And on that note, I think that we are out of time. So first, I want everyone on the panel to say where folks can find out more about their work on the internets, and also if there is anything coming up that you want to plug or let people know about. So like I said, I'm Tina Horn. You can find me at tinahorn.net, that's T-I-N-A-H-O-R-N, or wirepeopleintothat.com. Please subscribe and tell your friends about Wire People Into That, this pervy show, and at Tina Horn's ass on Twitter and Instagram. And what about you guys?
My Instagram is gingivitis. It's J-I-N-J-A-V-I-T-I-S. It's so gross. Thanks. Our Instagram is Allijin, A-L-L-I-J-I-N. I don't have anything coming up right now. I have a really bad memory, so maybe if anything, you can find it on my Instagram. If you're interested in Domina services, then talk to me after.
I mean, other than the allergen part, which has already been plugged, so I won't even go into that. You can see my piercing stuff under like my professional Instagram handle, which is AlexanderDMM, and you can also follow like the shit that we do and things that we're gonna book in the future. And if you want to book us, let us know. Shoot us a message. We're always down to do shit. Yeah. Oh yeah, and then I also do like the suspension stuff with Anchors Away, and you can go on anchorsaway.org, and yeah, that's really it. I'm not a very interesting person. That's fine.
I was going to say, not anything interesting about you. Okay. And Amy?
So
Hopefully, I will.
Is there anything
doing...
upcoming that, know, like perhaps in this space,
I
like next?
I won't be doing anything real soon because it's happening right now, and I need a break. But you can find us on Instagram under Wildflower Sex. It is confusing. Our name's Wildflower, not Wildflower Sex, but. You know, just add the S-E-X on the end, why not? And you can go on our website, it's wildflowersex.com. We have all of our toys that also we have upstairs. If you don't want to buy them in person, we can ship them to you or whatnot. But we have educational sections, we have blog articles, and we have a sex Q&A, so you can submit questions and I'll answer them and probably make a giant papier-mâché pussy, dick, whatever to go with it, just for fun. We also have our YouTube channel, which is connected via that. But yeah, so I don't have anything upcoming because this is it.
What's coming up next? Can you talk about some of the other things that are going on today?
Yeah, what's happening, we are having Evian Whitney, who's coming up next, who is a sexuality doula. We then have a little sex magic segment, which is going to be really sexy. It's going to give you some tools on, practical tools on how to heal and get in more in touch with your sexual self. After that, we have E, who is a spiritual advisor, Brooklyn Bruja, fucking amazing person, who will be speaking. Then we have an amazing duo, Spirit Twin, which is like an immersive electro duo, which they were doing sound check earlier, and it's going to be phenomenal. Then we have queer rapper Dick Van Dyck, and we closing with Charlene, the drag performer of all drag performers, Miss Bushwick 2017.
Cool. Well, I just want to shout out Nick and Ben on the ones and twos. I mean, the audio. Can we hear it for the folks that have made this audio so good? And I want to thank all of you for being here and being such wonderful, active listeners and for all of your questions. And thank you to the Eurydice Gallery, an amazing sex-positive kink gallery right here in Brooklyn, and to Amy for organizing and curating an amazing event. Everybody have fun, shop for butt plugs, and see you all soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.